Consider useless. Panče, kalba, tu je bez šela, pripasi druga je veča, potite nam, a ne bi bilo, lačno bi bilo na bolu. So we're about to conclude the chapter entitled The Liberty's Lamentation. This is the second last verse. And it's, I should say, it's a very perplexing pastime. But at the same time, it's filled with so much of instructions, not only for householders, but for everyone in any ashram. So, Srila Prabhupada mentions this verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Yagyatat Kama Bandhana, Tara Tam Kama Konteya Mukta Sambhasamachara. And the translation is that work that is sacrificed for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work binds one to this material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. So if we look at the work or the activity of Kadama Muni and Devahuti, it may seemingly look like they were nothing but for years engaged in sense gratification, enjoying their senses with the celestial airplanes, which had cities and parks and etc. etc. But it is good to note, if we put it in context, this pastime is being inquired by so many different types of personalities. Particularly here, does anyone know in this third chapter who's asking about the progeny of Devahuti and Kadamani? Vidura and Maitreya. So these Vidura and Maitreya, the noble ordinary personality, these are persons who want nothing but to hear about the eternal pastimes of Krishna. Yet they particularly ask about this back in the 21st chapter, they are asking particularly about the progeny of Kadama Muni and Devahuti. And of course we should also be inquisitive about this relationship. How is it? How did they attain perfection? How did they satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So by the Krishna consciousness, by their actions, they actually satisfy the Lord, and Lord bless them in so many different ways. So as it is mentioned, in this material world that we are in, we have to perform some type of work. There is some duties that we perform. Better we perform work in accordance with written scripture and according to Vedic texts than to perform work under no authority or under no authorized authority. Therefore, when Kadama Muni's father, this baby Kadama Muni, was born from the shadow of Lord Brahma, instructed Kadama Muni to procreate and populate the universe with good progeny. And we can see it's an instruction from the Guru. So this is in Guru-disciple relationship. Instructions will be there. And we have to use our intelligence as best as we can to try to fulfill this instruction. So Kadama Muni went on and performed penance and austerity, to the point that the Lord Vishnu appeared. And Kadama Muni spoke to the Lord. So you might think, how is it that you get vision of the Lord and you don't ask for liberation or you don't ask for perfection immediately? You continue to go back to procreate and populate the universe. It seems on a scale, it seems that you could have asked for better and you got less. But we should understand that Kadama Muni was following instructions of his spiritual master. And also setting examples for us that there is a gradual way in which we can slowly move away from our attachment situation to gradually detach by the process of Krishna consciousness. So the life and pastimes of devotee in Kadamani is showing how one uses this attachment and detachment in a proper way over time to attain the goal of life. So it is not that in Kali Yuga most persons will not be able to just give up everything on the spot. When they hear or when they read the pastimes of how Kadamani and Devahuti gradually became advanced in their Krishna consciousness, it gives some general hope, some possibility that yes, if I also follow the instructions or follow in the footsteps of these personalities, I too might attain that Krishna consciousness in the topmost form. So just as Kadamani and Devahuti were working under the guidance, or we could say under the state laws of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, similarly, we also work under the guidance given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we have so many different injunctions, so many different sacrifices, yajnas that are listed in the Vedic literatures themselves. So sometimes it might seem confusing for persons. So which sacrifice do I perform? Which ritualistic activity should I be attached to, etc.? And why is it so many options given? Why can't we just have one particular option to attain perfection, etc., etc., that this goes on? And why do we have to come to the material world in the first place to do all of this? So the material world, of course, is not created, or we should say the material world is not created from Krishna's desire. It is born from our own desires because we wanted to be the masters of a domain. So we cannot do that in the spiritual world because it is all about Krishna. So we had to have our own little playpen to try to be lord and masters of all that we survey. However, at the same time, the Lord manifests himself in different ways through Shastra, through different literatures, so that we can gradually come to the platform of accepting him as the supreme authority. Now, based on our nature we have acquired due to association with the monks, the material nature will be attracted, our consciousness will be attracted and affiliated with certain practice. So we have Shastra that, or we have different parts of the Vedas or the Upanishads that give ritualistic activities, priority, karma kanda, so many organa kanda sections, so many processes given there for persons to stabilize their faith in that particular practice so that they make gradual progress. It might not take one lifetime, it might take many, many lifetimes. So, of course, Krishna consciousness, as always explained by Srila Prabhupada, Krishna consciousness goes beyond, you know, normal codes of morality and ethics. Krishna consciousness goes beyond body designation and anything to do with body designation. In contrast to, and of course, because Krishna consciousness goes beyond these moral codes and morality, it is the topmost yoga system. As we have the book, Topmost Yoga System, as Krishna explains in the Yoga Ladder, that the Krishna conscious person is the supreme, or is the topmost, sorry, not the supreme, topmost yogi, because he understands the aspects of the Supreme Lord in totality. So everything from the impersonal to the Paramatma aspect, the devotee understands that Bhagavan is the source of both. However, when we have persons who are attracted to the mammoth philosophy, which means work hard, play hard, and enjoy later. I think some of us can, at least myself, we can relate to that. That used to be our model previous life: work hard, play hard, and then we can enjoy later. But the later isn't guaranteed. When I'm in my 40s or 50s, I'll have my yacht and I'll have my money in my bank and my properties and blah, 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 and the list goes on. But there is no guarantee that you will, number one, still be alive, that the economy will be stable, that there won't be any natural disasters or catastrophic events that will wipe out our plans. Or there won't be another living entity who's going to demolish our future plans to enjoy. Remembering that in the material world, there'll always be those who have more and those who have less. Therefore, this envious nature will always be there, because some will have more, some will have less. And it creates an uncomfortable situation, and hence, sometimes the Bhagavad Gita, we read Prabhupada as the stringent laws of material nature. Something that is stringent, it's kind of uncomfortable, it doesn't feel or taste good, it's just stringent. Right? Because of this envy that is created in the material world, you have more than me, why? And we do not claim accountability for our past actions. Right? We want to do the hard work and enjoy, but we don't understand that in our previous life, we might have done things that have resulted in this present life, but we don't want to take accountability. Generally, when we're preaching to people, of course, we don't come and say, in the midst, especially of atrocious activities in the material world, whether it's terrorist attacks or whatever, of course, we don't come up to people and say, well, it's your karma, it's their karma that they were there in that shopping center in Nice, and it's their karma. We have to balance it out and not fry people out. So we combine the head and the heart. Yes, we sympathize with persons, but we package it in a more delectable and digestible manner. And the reason I say this, last time there was someone, I guess, who gave a talk at Urban Yoga, and there was one lady who asked particularly about, because the concept of karma came up, so how is it? Is it the people's karma that they were there at that spot, they suffered? And this people was like, yeah. And in a lecture, we're like, yeah, you know, this is life. You know, you were there, it was meant to happen to you. And this person was kind, it just did not sit well. They weren't ready to accept that, you know, material existence is brutal. Actually, material, it's not a nice, you know, sometimes we think, you know, we're living in a material world. You know, Madonna wrote a song about it back in the 70s. You know, we're living in a material world and I'm in a material girl. It's like, yeah, we're living in a material world, a material girl, you're a material boy, it's all great. But actually, it's not. Because the laws of nature are very, not as merciful as we hope. There's no vacations, there's no time off. The laws of karma will act based on our actions. So whatever we do in this material world, we're going to be bound by our actions. Hence in this verse it is said, whatever action that we're pretty much performing, if they do not lead to Krishna consciousness, if they do not give a rise to Krishna consciousness, then we're pretty much like a dead body walking. Now that might sound like, oh, that's just so pessimistic, dead body walking. And if you understand how alert are we to what's going on around. Some persons actually do not think what's going on around. But some persons rejoice in the variety of material misery. It's like, yeah, you know, if you can't do it like this, you know, you can do it in this way. It's all the same, and you'll have fun, you have a little bit of pain and suffering, but it's all worth it. And you have persons who tell you, know, you have to go through this pain. If you want it, you know you have to go through this pain. If you want your beauty, you have to suffer for it. Common, especially amongst a certain gender. You know, if you want to be beautiful, you have to suffer. Things will be put in your face. Things will be done to your head. Things will be done to different parts of your body. So you can feel good and try to exploit the material energy. And there's so much variety in this, and persons take it to be, freedom, to be the enjoyment, topmost enjoyment in life. But they do not see that these actions bind them to body identification. So you're going to have to come back again and reap the rewards of your actions. And the result of body attachment is that you are put again into another womb. And again, the cycle continues. In contrast, looking at the so-called enjoyment of kadamuni and devahuti, right there, even it may seem like, oh, they just enjoyed it, it looks the same. They were flying and they were doing all these things, but it was Srila Vishvanatha's talk who mentioned on this entire chapter, particularly the last few verses, that actually they were not so bothered by this mystic potency. It wasn't a big deal having mystic potency. It wasn't a big deal having so much opulence. Devahuti is a princess. She has lived with opulence. Kadama Muni, Mahayogi. Like opulent, mystic potencies for him, he has attained. So it didn't go to his head. In the material world, opulence goes to people's heads. As soon as you become wealthy, beautiful, you're known to be a renowned person, or you're well-educated, you have institutions named after you, have organizations in your name is everywhere. You start thinking you're untouchable. And when things start deteriorating, it's like, oh, how could it happen to him or her? They won the Nobel Peace Prize, and we just didn't see it coming. Anyone who has a material body is subject to afflictions caused by the modes of material nature. Adi Atmika, Adi Devika, Adi Bhotika. No one is excluded. So people start thinking, oh. But in the life of Devahuti and Kadamuni, they were living this opulence, it didn't go to their head. Devahuti knew in the beginning, she knew that her husband would leave. She knew that she was Yoga Lakshana. But in the 21st chapter, it explains she was equipped with the peak of perfection in the yogi system. Now this is Devahuti, this is no ordinary girl, she's just a Madhuri. Yoga Lakshana. And her husband, Kadama Muni, Mahayogi. So these were very elevated personalities who were showing different types of relationships and how, like, gradually going through this in service to Krishna, one gets perfection of life. And that is why my trained Vidura are conversing about this, because it is amazing. This whole pastime, it is quite amazing to see that yes, they performed their duties, Kadama Muni fulfilled the instruction of Lord Brahma. And when it was time, daughters married off, before he left, Devahuti reminds, by the way, remember you gave a promise, you said you will get a son. And another great gift that Kadama Muni had given Devahuti was fearlessness. She attained the way, she understood the highest goal of life. So the proper consciousness, there's a time and place for everything. So just as there was a time and place where, as I've explained earlier on, that due to Devahuti's service, making her husband's focus, her own focus, Kadama Muni was always focused on serving Lord. At no point was he ever in forgetfulness. So it's explained that Gauravena and Rishambena, that service and separation and making the mood and mission of the Lord your mood and mission. So by serving the husband, of course, Devahuti, a husband who is worthy of being served, who is a devotee of Krishna, she would also get the perfection. She would also get that that topmost goal in life. So by serving like that, she became emaciated. She wasn't taking care of herself. She was very selfish, assisting her husband in his service. So when it came time to procreate, she didn't necessarily look attractive. And that is why, by mystic potency, just like that, right, Kadama Muni didn't need to be glorified or banners all around. He has created a mystic plane that flies and all these damsels are coming on, etc., etc. No, just by his mystic potency, he created this palace and he created the opportunity for Devahuti to be bathed and clothed in all this opulence so that the right consciousness can be there to fulfill the order of the spiritual master, Lord Brahma, to satisfy the Lord. The same Lord who had appeared to Kadama Muni, impressed with his sacrifice. So in that mood, they wanted to perform service for the pleasure of the Lord. So they're populating the universe and having these nine daughters who would be given to the Prajapatis to further increase good progeny. That was their service. And they did it well. Sharishana Chakvatthi also explains that Devahuti wasn't necessarily just wanting to have a child just for the sake of it. She saw the strength and the spiritual strength of Kadama Muni, and she could see the world needs more of such persons of such caliber. And that is why she reminded her husband, you promised that there would be a son. Not because she just wanted to have a son, but because the world needs the caliber of that type of devotee. So in that service mood, this pastime we're being reminded of that. And this is why Vidura and Maitreya are very much interested in hearing about the approach to me, because this was for the pleasure of the Lord. And that is why in the end, it's kind of like a conundrum. You have the Supreme Lord as your son, you leave home. The Supreme Lord is coming there, Lord Kapila Dev, is appearing as your son, then you leave. And also the Lord Kapila Dev finishes instructing his mother, Devahuti, then he also leaves, showing his renunciation, his detachment. He is the Supreme Lord, he doesn't really need to do all these things. But at the same time, you have these things going on. You have God as your son, you leave him. So sometimes it seems confusing, but these relationships are only based on the spiritual attachment. On the spiritual platform, there is no separation. Of course, this takes, I'm repeating it, but I really haven't realized it. I don't really understand. The spiritual platform, there's no separation. It's still not there. That is the fact. And that is what the acharyas are also trying to allude to. That on the path of bhakti, there is no spiritual separation. That there is always that connection based on service. So this entire history is showing the right way to be attached and showing the right way to be detached from so-called material life. There's a time and place for everything. Just like the vanashram system is given, the vanas and the ashrams are given to give us that smooth transition, that gradually this attachment you might have should actually diminish, because we're meant to be increasing our attachment through devotional service. So Kadama Muni is showing how to be detached in the right way. For those, of course, who will not be granted immediate liberation. Not every one of us can just immediately become liberated. Therefore, this whole life, this whole pastime is showing us the gradual process that we can follow to achieve that detachment from family life particularly. And this is all going on for the pleasure of the Lord, and that is why these advanced souls are hearing about this pastime. So there's no selfishness on the part of the Rukin Karamuni. We might say, oh, for years they were enjoying and having children and family, etc. But let's remember what the premise is. The premise is they got given instructions to populate the universe with good progeny. Kadama Muni spent thousands of years in meditation where he even pleased the Lord who appeared before him. And indeed they did create that progeny with high spiritual potency and were able to achieve the goal of life. So that is the foundation that was meant for the pleasure of the Lord. It wasn't a concocted thought, let's do like this and like that. They actually followed through. So the spiritual wealth can be achieved by anyone in any ashram. Right? This attachment to material nature or whatever is dealt with in every single ashram to different degrees. So gradually that detachment and attachment to Krishna is displayed in all ashrams, in all types of relationships. So in this mature world, just like when Akura was approaching Vrindavan, I think he gave that analogy, just like the on the ocean, on the river, sticks are brought together by the waves, and with due course of time, they separate. So similarly, we are also brought together in due course of time. In this lifetime, we will separate. So we are meant to learn how to deal with that and learn how to properly become detached from that situation, because it will happen, whether it's a husband and wife relationship, spiritual master, disciple, that will be there. And we are meant to equip ourselves with the right knowledge to understand there will be separation, yes, but on the spiritual platform there is no separation. And that takes a lot of spiritual advancement and maturity to really, really grasp. So in this relationship, we can see that the by Kadama Muni's potency, his strength, he was able to give Devaru to love of God. And that is why Krishna says sometimes his devotee is more merciful than him. It is the devotee. For most of us, we connected with Krishna consciousness with the process because we met a devotee of Krishna. Whether it's meeting Srila Prabhupada through his books, or someone who is distributing the books on the street, it is by that devotee's mercy that we get closer and closer to Krishna. And one in a relationship, one person has the ability to give, and the other earns the right to receive. So I found this to be a very, very wonderful quote that I've heard from His Holiness Devamrita Swami, that one has the ability to give and the other person earns the right to receive. So Devamrita had earned that right to receive that love of God by dint of her Krishna consciousness, her selfless surrender through service to a devotee, Kadama Muni. So by selfless surrender, service to the spiritual master, to the other devotees, to the husband, who is first and foremost, or to the wife, first and foremost, a devotee of Krishna. And eternally will be a devotee of Krishna. So by serving devotees of Krishna, we entreat them. We earn the right to get this pure love of God. And that is very pleasing to Krishna. These reciprocations are pleasing to the Lord. And although we'll hear later on how Kadama Muni himself will respond to Devabhuti. Devabhuti is speaking to Kadama Muni with voices choked with emotions. Now, it's not like they were getting mental on each other. or crying or just being miserably afflicted, but these are ecstatic emotions because they are, one is receiving love of God in appreciation, trying to express gratitude. And one is expressing gratitude for all the years you have served and assisted me in my journey to Krishna. So these loving relationships are there in all ashrams. Sometimes we get the good fortune of being around senior devotees or our Diksha Gurus or travel with them, and we see how they interact with each other or how they interact with persons who brought them to Krishna consciousness. I always see this between my spiritual master and the devotee who really in some sense took away everything from him materially. If we hear the story of how the devotee was taking donations from him and etc., etc. So whenever Devi Swami sees Daivishakti Manaji, he remembers that it is this person who actually grinded me to the power and made me a devotee of Krishna. And he always has that gratitude. And so many other devotees, and in the sannyas ashram, of course, you see them together when they have their sangha. You see the spiritual emotions. It's not that they just feel like being emotional to each other, but there is a support system they give each other to try to realize Krishna. So we'll hear later on how Kadava Muni further reciprocates with Deva Bhuti, expressing his gratitude and also speaking about how she has attained that fearlessness, and it is that fear that actually keeps people in the material world, but she has attained fearlessness because she has realized the supreme goal of life. So this pastime is completely free from all sorts of selfishness, even amidst all the comfort, opulence, mystic potency. There is no selfishness, but it is all for the pleasure of Krishna. And hopefully this is the message we take with us, that no matter what relationships we might be in right now, whatever ashrams, it is the principle of every single ashram is that we try to have Krishna as our center, and all our activities are meant to please that center, that foundation. So I'll stop here and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions.
You said one has the ability, on the ability to receive, you said. So whenever devotee goes for books and when they approach 100 people, out of that 10 people gets a book.
Mm-hmm.
So how someone can, on the ability to receive, because they are giving your take, but people don't take. So how can they earn this?
They might not take then, but they will take later. And of course, especially with the question is sometimes we're doing book distribution, out of 100 people that we try or attempt to stop, 10 people will actually take a book and walk off. So how do people earn? Because earlier on I was mentioning that in a relationship, one has the ability to give and the other one earns the ability to receive. So that earning, how do we earn that reception? We could go back right to some Ajnata Sukriti. Some persons end up taking a book, let's say in this book marathon, and they will tell you that 10 years ago or 5 years ago, they were stopped by someone on the street. They didn't take a book then, they took a cookie or a flyer. That is receiving service from a devotee. So sometimes persons who actually receive books have some kind of Sukriti, unknown devotional service that they have performed. And also, when we go out on the Sankirtan, Krishna is there, and he's also the super soul in the heart of the person. So the super soul is always there. So sometimes the super soul, facilitates, encourages people to actually be receptive and take a book. The super soul inspired. And when it is not the right time for that person, then next time. For example, I have a brother who lives in South Africa. And for years, you know, I tried to say this or that, or give a book, etc., etc., nothing would ever happen, and this is digital. Fast forward 10 years later, I get a message from one devotee in South Africa, and I read it in the middle of the night, because, you know, I had insomnia, so anything moves, I wake up. So I read this message in the middle of the night, and I couldn't understand why he sent me a message about some Sankirtan story. And he referenced a nickname, and I didn't understand. So I wrote back the next day and said, it's a very nice nature story, but why did you send it to me? Just out of curiosity. And he said, oh, actually, the person I met is your brother. And he told me you used to call him this when you were a kid, so I approached him on books in Midrand, Johannesburg, and he took the books, and we were very happy, and they took cookbooks with his wife, etc., etc. So years before then, he wasn't ready, and Krishna, the Super Soul in the Heart, did not really inspire. But because he's always been supportive of my Krishna consciousness, and inquired, and been non-envious and critical of what I'm doing, somehow or the other, this time he was able to receive Krishna in the form of books. So there's many factors, it's not just us, but the Super Soul is also acting in their hearts. And gradually, as people perform unknown devotional service, they build up their credit to get Krishna. That's why even this prasad, exposing the process of Krishna consciousness to others, allows them the opportunity to do some service, which gives them some piety to come to Krishna. So that is why any preaching even is very important, even just prasad, or giving a flyer, or going to the, you know, vegan day, whatever, and distributing, it allows people to get into contact with Krishna.
That's what I was interested. Why did you mention something about yoga lakshana? What does that mean?
Yoga lakshana means one who has achieved perfection in mystic. I'll read it for you. One who is equipped with the peak of perfections in the yoga system. This was used to describe Devahuti in the 21st chapter, 3:21-4. You can read about it.
Devahuti and the Skardhuti, they knew that Lord Narayan coming to their home. Actually, as a form of Kapila Muni. So, in spite of that, why Devahuti is lamenting this? They have spent a lot of time by sense gratification.
Why is Devahuti lamenting? I'm saying that she has spent so much time in sense gratification. Later on, we'll hear when Kadama Muni, the next chapter is called Romanization of Kadama Muni, and you'll speak. Responding to Devahuti's meditation, because she sees herself as having not achieved anything, having wasted her life, not wasting her life, but spent so much time in sense gratification. But Kadama Muni actually explained that you do not see that all these actions you are performing, you are becoming Krishna conscious simultaneously. Because everything you were doing was to assist me and to please the Lord. So, of course, sometimes in the humility of advanced souls, they see themselves as having wasting time, particularly when it comes to something like procreating or populating the universe. So, I won't spoil the fun now. In the next chapters, we'll hear what Kadama Muni actually says to Devahuti in response to her meditation. But he pacifies her and actually points out, you've actually achieved fearlessness. You've achieved it. In this time that you were thinking you have spent so much in sense gratification, you have achieved fearlessness and you have achieved love of God. The Lord Himself has manifested as your Son and He will instruct you further. So He will point out different things later on to Devahuti to pacify her. And sometimes in reference to us, we are practicing Krishna consciousness and Sometimes we feel nothing is going on, there's no promise. But if we really step back and look at where we were and where we are now, with all humility, not that we want to start walking around thinking, yes, I'm now the new yoga Lakshmi in the temple, and I'm a Mahayogi. Of course not. We don't go parading and chin up, you know, all these materials, these demons, etc. No, no, not in that mood. But when we actually step back and see what situation we came from and where we are now and what qualities we've attained, these, you know, the Krishna conscious qualities we've attained, it's, for some of us, it's just shocking. Well, some of you have come from very nice families, very, you know, very cultured families and very protected families, and some of us were just wild horses. Well, everything, you can name it. Some of us have done it. So now that we've taken up a lifestyle, it's like, oh, I actually didn't see how much I have changed. There's still a lot of work to be done. However, sometimes when we're getting purified, we're stuck in the middle of dealing with this anartha, dealing with this laziness, and dealing with this inattentive japa, and dealing with just the material world and our pride and our envy. Sometimes we're stuck dealing with that, and we fail to actually see, actually, if we just put on a flat line, you went from zero to 180 in terms of that change in consciousness and a change in lifestyle. Yes, we're in the pressure cooker and on the fast track, and things are coming up. Remember what the pastime of the churning of the milk ocean. When you're purifying something, or when something is very valuable, it sometimes takes a while for us to see the end product. When you're cleaning, or when you just get diamonds, I come from a diamond country, it's all rough and rugged, and it goes through many processes, and the quality product is impeccable. So they're churning the milk ocean. What's the first thing that came out? Hala poison, right? Scorpions, snakes, this, that. But in the end, nectar. So we're in Krishna consciousness and we're dealing with the moods, we're dealing with our minds. For some of us, we've had to deal with our minds and our past and so many things, and then really focus on Krishna consciousness and get purified and be in association of devotees with all respect and etc. And we feel like, oh, I don't know where I'm from, I don't know what's going to come out. But rest assured, if we stick to the process, the end product, Krishna says, surely you will come to me, to the spiritual world, where there's no envy, Vaikuntha, there's no enviousness. So it means there would have been a lot of work done. We would have gone from point A to X and got the qualification and deserved those blessings and benedictions by dint of our Krishna consciousness. So Kapila Muni will tease Devabhuti later on as he speaks. What did you mean in the last question? What can we do? Okay, what can we do? Well, many things. So the question is, what can we do? I mentioned earlier on about gratitude to those who bring us to Krishna consciousness. So there are many things we can do. So we were attracted to Krishna consciousness and we're pretty much saved. You know how the Christians say, you've been saved, hallelujah. Right? They pray on you on the street. I've been prayed on so many times. To show our gratitude, you want, just like Devabhuti is going to do, the Acharya explained that she wanted to show her gratitude by giving the world an offspring from Kadama Muni because he was such a powerful person, not material but spiritual. So we also want to share the world, we want to share what we've got. So if we've been given Krishna consciousness, let's take what we know and give it. That is one of the best ways we can show our gratitude. Give the wealth that we've been passed on to other persons. In our own way, it It doesn't have to be on a huge scale or magnificent, but whomever you meet, as Lord Chaitanya would say, just talk to them about Krishna. So we can repay like that, dedicating our life to glorifying Krishna, whether it's through prasada, whether it's through taking care of devotees who come to Krishna, whether it's through supporting preaching outreach projects, using our administrative abilities, using our intelligence, you name it, there's so many things we can do. Actually, one interesting thing, I'm doing a program with Leadership Victoria, and I was shocked. Of course, we had to go through interviews, etc., etc., and I gave them the whole spiel, I'm a Hare Krishna, what, I'm from Botswana, blah, 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 this is what I do. And we got together a few Saturdays ago, and, you know, talking about how we can be good leaders in our community, etc. I'm trying to get ways to preach to people. So when I was telling people about being a Bhakti Yogi or a Hare Krishna, people just looked at me like, what's that? Method, so you don't know Hare Krishna, we sing on the streets, we have a restaurant, they were like, no. So do you come to the city often? They're like, yeah. Like, and you don't know. You've lived in Melbourne all your life and you don't know. And they're like, yes. Then I'm like, well, there's still a lot of work to be done. There are many people who go on the street and they still don't know this life from all the knowledge here. So there's lots that we can do to reach out to people. And just recently one girl asked a question. Krishna was giving a talk about Om Yoga and that question and answer, and she said we have to upgrade our life, and this girl said, where's the place, where are the people who live that upgraded life? I don't know where to go. So we can see there is actually a need in society, people just don't know where to go. But if we have this philosophy and if we showcase it in our home, in a place where it's easily digestible for people, then they will take to it because people are looking. They hear us talk, but they want to see the living proof. Where is the place I can go where I can mix with people who have an upgraded life, spiritual life? So there's many things we can do. Open up centers, new restaurants, make little halfway homes where people can join at their own pace, whatever. There's so many possibilities. Okay, I've gone over time, so I'm in trouble. Thank you very much. Dr. Shimabara.